But now we present Caroline, Queen of the Pirates, a series in 13 parts in which Dave Windsor traces the history of the world's best-known offshore radio station, Radio Caroline. Episode 6 is entitled A New Beginning.
Loving the wilderness, Radio Caroline. Loving the music, Radio Caroline.
Good morning and welcome to another day's broadcasting from Radio Caroline 558. We broadcast from the Ross Revenge, anchored in international waters on the North Sea.
Loving the music, Radio Caroline.
The beginning of 1973 saw a series of breakdowns and misadventures befall the MV Mi Amigo, and as a result, programs from Radio Caroline were of a particularly erratic nature. But there was worse to come. Anchored nearby were two other radio stations, Radio Nordsee International and Radio Veronica. But on the night of April the 2nd, there were very nearly no ships at all. A hurricane, the worst for 50 years, hit the coast of Holland, bringing devastation and death in its wake. The Mi Amigo was partially flooded, and Radio Nordsee put off the air by the gales. But it was Holland's longest surviving offshore station, Veronica, that bore the brunt of the storm, which, at its height, caused the anchor chain on the motor vessel Norderney to snap. A last dramatic broadcast from the ship was made to the crew's families before the MV Norderney, after drifting helplessly, ran aground at the port of Scheveningen.
Come on, sail away with Veronica today.
Tot ons spijt moeten we onze uitzendingen staken, omdat we te dicht het strand naderen. We gaan zo meteen van boord en nou, alles is hier verder goed. We hopen dat alles goed blijft gaan. We hopen ook dat u weer gauw muziek kunnen verzorgen en blijft ons steunen. En aan alle vrouwen, sterkte.
For Veronica, the timing of the disaster could not have been worse. For with noises emanating from the Dutch Parliament about a bill to outlaw offshore radio, the station had been promoting a huge rally in Den Haag to protest against any such legislation. The demonstration was due almost immediately. But being off the air, how much support could Veronica expect? It was imperative that the station be on the air in time for D-Day, April the 18th. Veronica's misfortune, however, was to turn out a blessing in disguise for the Caroline organization. Chris Carey explains.
One particular night, I went to bed at about 11 o'clock. I was well shattered. I was woken up the next day at about 8 o'clock by Ronan to say, tell me about the ships. And he said, well, where's North Sea today? And I said, they're okay. And how's us? We were on the air also okay. He said, well, what about Veronica? I said, well, I haven't listened to Veronica today, but I guess they're okay as well. So we'll go and look on the bloody beach because that's where they are. Go and do a deal with them quick. So we went around to meet Bill Verfey and Lex Harding and some of the other people there. And Roland also flew over very rapidly because this was a point where we could make a few quid and also show that we weren't just into money, we were into helping people. And we went across and talked to them. And they were very weary. They had lots of problems with the North Sea and were they going to have the same problems with Caroline. And we guaranteed that we'd have Veronica coming out on 259 within 3 days. Or I think it was 2 days. We didn't have really much time. And we were already off the air with all sorts of problems like generators and aerials that weren't working properly. And we guaranteed to Bill that we'd be on the air with his Veronica programs for the big rally. And we had to guarantee that we'd put Veronica programs out in 2 days. And all the Veronica personnel who had looked at the Caroline said it was absolutely impossible and that no way would Caroline ever do it. And they wouldn't talk to North Sea because it had fallen out with them. So it was all down to us or nothing. And I went on board with met Chicago and Dick, who also were very skeptical about the chance of it ever coming on. We worked day and night. I had a terrible cold. Chicago wasn't very well. He'd already hurt his hands by taking a heat exchanger out of some contraption in the engine room, and it ripped all his hands in two and was all bandaged up. A lot of effort and energy, mainly with Chicago and Dick Palmer. We finally got Veronica to come on the air. And we were supposed to be on, I think, at 10 o'clock in the morning. And at 1 minute past 11 o'clock, on came the Veronica jingles. And Veronica successfully broadcasted from the Caroline ship for about 10 days.
Tenminste, dankzij de welwillende bereidheid van een oom die we er plotseling hebben bijgekregen, naast onze eigen oom Bill. Zeer veel dank in de vorm van de volgende grammofoonplaat van het adres van Uncle Ronan Reilly.
What a terrible day, the third of May, 'cause a storm was coming to our shore. We were scared to stay, tried to get away, but no time was left anymore. We went back to our flats, put our son to bed, then he started to cry, though he didn't know why. I said, easy, boy, oh, it's gonna be alright, boy. Where people try to hide while the wind took its course. Trees broken to our thoughts we never get through. I even couldn't hear my cry, son was lying near me. I said, easy boy, boy, it's gonna be alright, boy, boy. I said, easy boy, boy, to live. And we all prayed together.
The Veronica ship, the Norderney, was in fact refloated on the same day as the rally. And for a few days, Veronica programs were broadcast simultaneously from both the Norderney and the Mi Amigo. The deal with Radio Veronica brought Caroline the much-needed revenue to get the lady back on the air. New studio equipment was purchased. But so, too, of paramount importance was a new aerial mast, a story in itself. Here's Chris Carey once again.
The Caroline aerial was basically built at night under cover under the most amazing conditions ever. And it came together. It was just an impossible feat. In fact, it was called all over Holland that Caroline's aerial was the wonder of Holland. And no way could it go up. But against all odds, it went up. And although it came down about 9 months later, it was mainly due to inexperienced people that were setting it up. But it did broadcast very well. In fact, it was almost the best aerial ever on a ship. No ship had ever had a base-loaded aerial before. And we were covering areas on quite low power that no other ship had done. And I admire the six or seven people that actually were involved in building that aerial, because they built it totally, really on my say-so. And I certainly had no experience of building aerials, and it was all a lot of research from a lot of people. We used to pay £100, which really isn't very much for a person's life, to climb an aerial, to do things that, I mean, most of them, I remember one day, Yarp finally put the last wire on it, and it came down, right down to the bottom, which took in those days something like about 15 minutes to climb that mast, came down it and said, well, fantastic, it all works. And then I openly told him that I knew nothing about aerials at all. It was all a total fantasy. And I'd drawn it out in the Caroline office house and had gone out to the ship and said, here we go. And they were under the impression that I was an aerial designer and had built hundreds of the damn things. And I went through some terrible moments thinking what I was going to tell these people's families. But if they'd actually fallen off and killed themselves, which was absolutely inevitable if the aerial had collapsed, or anything had gone wrong with my theory, that they would have crashed into the sea or into the ship and just killed themselves. Whatever was I going to tell their people? that if they'd kill themselves just for a mere 100 quid. And I think Robin and Norman, who put the last two pieces on the mast, got £50 each because the money was running a bit low there. And they never even said, don't worry, but they just said, thank you, that's okay, 50 quid's okay, we're down on the ground, it's up, it's finished. Great team spirit.
Ronnie Dalton, Andy Archer, Bert Bennett, Norman Barrington, Smite, Tony Allen, Jeff Palmer, Peter Zollerville, Mike Storm, Steve England, Robin Antroft in Chicago. The men from Caroline getting it together 24 hours a day on 259.
Let's see the mask with the most.
It is important to remember that at this time, commercial radio, under the auspices of the Independent Broadcasting Authority, had not come to Britain. And with no daytime alternative to BBC Radio 1 available, pop-hungry listeners were eager to hear Radio Caroline broadcast an all-day English service once again. Their hopes were to be realized in May 1973, when, after exhaustive test transmissions, the Dutch programs were confined to 259 meters, 1187 kilohertz, and a new 20-hour-a-day English service was introduced on 389 meters, 773 kilohertz.
A brand new release on the Midwest record label is called Walk On, Don't Look Back, and this is Paul Alexander. So nice to be here on the first ever regular program from Radio Caroline International in 1973.
Bij ons in de Caroline Countdown of Sound. Nou, je kan het papiertje zo dadelijk niet vinden waar het allemaal op staat. Ik zal het u straks dan wel weten te vertellen. Sean Cocker was dat, genoteerd in onze Countdown of Sound. En dat zijn de platen.
Caroline International with Paul Alexander.
In the medium wave at 389 meters, which is a frequency of 773 kilohertz, this is Radio Caroline International. The address of Caroline International is Caroline House, The Hague, in Holland. Once again, it's Radio Caroline International, Caroline House, The Hague, in Holland.
Guest sport fishing with R.J. Verlich's 35-meter-long motor ships, the Delphine, Condor, Martina, and Morgan Star. Guest sport fishing with R.J. Verlich, Visserhavenweg 52A, Scheveningen. Day-night telephone answering service on 070-514-021. 070-514-021. Guest sport fishing with R.J. Verlich.
Come to Flevo, Marlboro. Mannen met karakter leven met Marlboro. Een Amerikaanse filtersigaret met een rijk aroma. Marlboro. 1,75 voor 20 stuks. Marlboro. 'S werelds meest verkochte sigaret.
The Caroline Roadshow comes to Sloopy's in Mortecum.
Let's go!
8 o'clock is when it all starts happening with the disc jockeys Peter Zonneveld and Andy Archer. Sloopy's in Mortecum when the Caroline Roadshow visits Belgium.
The Radio Caroline Roadshow.
Wherever you go, go, go.
With Caroline.
Go, go!
Only once before had two services operated from an offshore station. So how did Caroline achieve such a feat? Chris Carey.
389 came about because it was a good frequency. It had already been proven by Radio 390, which is 389, or 773 kilocycles, which is the same thing, which was a very clear channel. The only other station to use it was Sweden, and it was crystal clear in England. Nobody else used it. And although all the BBC people that had advised Caroline and Radio London in the beginning had said that no way can you use frequencies more than 200 meters, 259 was really, really pushing it. Anyway, Ronan said, look, I don't think it's possible to get two stations out of one ship. It's only been done by Radio England. They spent absolutely fortunes doing it and never really got it together. I'll go to £100. If you can't do it for £100, forget about it. So we bought about £60 worth of copper wire, and we bought some few instances which weren't very suitable. And we almost ended up with a toilet, which was full of porcelain on the back mast, to use as an insulator, and for about 5 weeks, generator permitting, we had two stations going out without any interreaction at all, which was the perfect situation because we had the 259 going out to Holland, which was making money for us on just regular commercials, because at this time commercial radio at sea hadn't been outlawed by any convention at all, and the Dutch people were quite happy with the situation they'd got. They were the last people to sign the bill. And we did it. We wanted an English station on 389 which we did, and had that situation continued, we would have made money. The more stations you can get out from a radio ship, the better.
Radio Caroline.
After a few weeks, though, both stations were silenced by generator trouble. It was to be another 3 years before an all-day English service was heard from the Mi Amigo. So, finding herself without regular advertising revenue as a result of being off the air, Radio Caroline was in severe financial trouble. However, enough money was scraped together to replace the defunct Bath generators with two new 200kVA Deutsch ones. Modifications were made to the aerial system to enable the Mi Amigo to take to the air once again. And then a miracle. It was as if the lady's prayers had been answered. A 25-year-old Belgian businessman, Adrian van Lanschoot, approached Ronan O'Rahilly with a view to hiring airtime from the Mi Amigo at a cost of £2,000 per week. Belgium had introduced its own version of the Marine etc. Broadcasting Offences Act back in 1962, and van Lanschoot saw the Mi Amigo as a golden opportunity to cock a snoot at the Belgian authorities, as well as realise a lifelong dream by transmitting Flemish programmes into his homeland under the full protection of both international waters and the seemingly apathetic attitude to offshore radio taken at the time by the Dutch authorities. At 12 noon on the 15th of July 1973, after only 2 hours of test transmitting with non-stop Beatles music, van Lanschoot's own brand of pirate radio took to the air.
Radio Atlantis, Sivamal.
Speelt eigenlijk zo geen rol. Luisteraars, goedemiddag.
Radio Atlantis op de 385 meter. Is en blijft.
Ja, we blijven.
Klik je gehoord?
Ja, het klikje. Klik-klak.
Klik-klak, ja.
Zo gaat het klikje hier. Rustig man, hoor, anders krijgen we technische problemen met de bandopnemer hier of zo. Wie weet. You are the sunshine of my life. And with a Stevie Wonder.
Radio Atlantis.
The original intention was for Radio Atlantis to broadcast on 389 meters, 773 kilohertz, and publicize the station as Radio Atlantis 385. However, the 50 kilowatt transmitter aboard the Mi Amigo was tuned to 259 meters, 1187 kilohertz, and this was the frequency which was used. During the summer of 1973, programs from Radio Atlantis continued on 259 throughout the day. But what of Radio Caroline? At 9 p.m. on the 24th of July, listeners to 1187 kilohertz were taken by surprise when a new English service took to the air, playing progressive album music.
The time is now exactly 10 o'clock and you're listening to Radio Seagull. As I said earlier in the first hour, but you may have missed it, being as this is the first night from Radio Seagull, every Monday night between 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock we'll be having a special schools program with the school's top 20 and school news and other items of interest for people at school, as well as a weekly competition with classical music, sport and also general knowledge as well. Dennis looking at me in amazement. It's very cold in here tonight, isn't it? Ooh.
When Radio Atlantis joined us in the summer, we had to put an English service on. And there'd been several complaints from listeners that Caroline wasn't really Caroline when it was only playing heavy album tracks. So we decided to call it Radio Girolamo, being as Barry Everett and Hugh Nolan were joining us. And then we had a meeting in London and decided that it would probably be more appropriate to call it Radio Seagull because it was on the sea.
Those are the Doors, and when the music's over. And the music will be over tonight a bit earlier than normal at 2 o'clock because we have to close down for one or two technical adjustments. But we'll be reopening tomorrow morning, of course, at 6 o'clock with Radio Atlantis and Radio Seagull, of course, at 9 o'clock in the evening through to 6 o'clock in the morning with Bob Noakes.
Tony Allen and myself, Andy Archer.
Radio Seagull was quite a unique experience, really, because it was doing what Radio Geronimo was doing a few years previously, but doing it for much longer periods, from 9 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock in the morning. And we had quite a good team on board. There was Barry Everett and Hugh Nolan, also Mickey Mercer, and later on, of course, Mike Hagler joined us, Johnny Jason and Tony Allen. I think Radio Seagull was a good station in as much as we were playing not only rock music, but also jazz and classical music as well.
The Love and Spoonful, that was called Younger Girl. Hello, Bob.
All right.
I think you ought to say good evening to all our listeners, the many millions of them from all the mail we had out. Do you have a nice holiday?
Well, I did, yes. The last week
We've had some very bad weather, actually, so you're very lucky to get on here tonight. Yeah. Or very unlucky. I don't know what tomorrow's got in store for us, I'm sure.
Oh,
17 minutes now away from 2 o'clock. And
this is Radio Seagull on 259 metres, and at 11 o'clock tonight, Mike Hagler comes along, followed at 1 o'clock by Classics with Bob Noakes. And then from 3 to 6, it's Mickey Mercer's music.
Radio Seagull, though, was not much encouragement to eager pop fans who didn't enjoy its underground format. The question on many people's lips at the time, what about a return to all-day English, with Radio Caroline once again playing top 40 music? But the new deal with Radio Atlantis was bringing in much-needed revenue to Caroline House in Van Hogendorpstraat in The Hague, and without it, the Mi Amigo would almost certainly have remained silent. The summer passed without incident, with Van Lanschoot selling his Carnaby boutique merchandise by day and Radio Seagull entertaining a lot of aging hippies by night. Then, at 1:41 p.m. on the 1st of October 1973, the weather hit once again. Gale force winds caused aerial mast number 2 to collapse into the North Sea, leaving only a 26-foot section standing. A makeshift system was erected, and transmissions resumed 3 days later, but at a power of only 10 kilowatts, as opposed to the usual 50. Reception of the Mi Amigo's transmissions was very bad, and at night, even inaudible. The temporary aerial finally failed on the 18th of October at about 9:30 in the morning. Shortly afterwards, Radio Atlantis parted company with the Caroline organization and decided to buy their own radio ship. However, Caroline House immediately decided to put the money earned from Adrian Van Lanschoot to good use. Mast number 3 was to be built by professional riggers, and a serious attempt to get the Mi Amigo back on the air for Christmas was to be made. By Christmas Eve morning, the old lady was boasting a 165-foot yellow antenna and looked quite defiant as she lay at anchor off the Dutch coast. At 3:45 that same afternoon, test transmissions were broadcast on 259 metres without any station identification, although the playing of Caroline by the Fortunes, the station's theme tune, and of certain jingles did somewhat give the game away. On Christmas morning, a special programme was put out, which lasted until 1 a.m. on Boxing Day.
The time in Central Europe is now 10 o'clock, and in Great Britain it's 9 o'clock. Good morning and Merry Christmas to you. This is a test transmission from the motor vessel Mi Amigo, anchored 6 miles off the Dutch coast and international waters.
The time in Central Europe is 11 o'clock. In Great Britain, it's 10 o'clock. Now, I know it's a bit early to open a bottle of champagne at this time on a Christmas morning.
But hang on.
There it goes. Nice bottle of champagne. Nothing like it for a Christmas morning breakfast. So, the health of all of us here on the Mi Amigo to everyone listening at the moment. Good health to you. We have Peter Chicago in the studio with us, our chief engineer. And doubtless Peter wants to say hello to his family. So, do you want to come up? He's reading a back copy of the Daily Telegraph. I think I could find better things to do.
Well, it was sent, actually, by one of the friends I want to say hello to him. That's Michael Bass, living in Croydon, Surrey. Of course, I want to say hello to my parents, also living in Croydon, and my brother and sister, both of whom will be home for Christmas. I'd also like to say hello to Alan, who's in Leidschendam at the moment, looking after the flat in my absence. And very quickly, have I forgotten anybody, Andy? Anybody I ought to have said hello to?
The man upstairs.
The man upstairs. I have forgotten somebody. Oh, yes, Bruno and your wife, Luce, also in Leidschendam. I'd like to say hello to both, if you're listening.
Oh, and also Buster as well, of course. But I say hello to Buster.
Oh, of course, Buster, and many thanks also on my behalf for and some technical parts that you were instrumental in obtaining. So thanks very much for that, Buster.
Okay, the next record is for all those people mentioned. And Buster, have a very happy Christmas from all of us out here. At the beginning of the program, which was about 35 minutes ago, I opened a bottle of champagne. And just looking at this rather large green bottle in front of me, I see it's empty. So, Norman, if you'd like to do the honours behind me, I've got hands all over the place, so I can't really open a bottle. Making very hard work. That's it. There we are. There we go. Champagne flying all over the place. Peter's Daily Telegraph, I'm afraid, is covered in champagne now. But anyway, once more, let's drink to you and wish you all a very happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Ready? Happy Christmas. One, two, three. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Further test transmissions were to follow, and at 6 a.m. on the 28th of December, regular testing commenced under the name of Radio Mi Amigo. This station, which took its name from the ship, was operated by another Belgian businessman, this time waffle manufacturer Sylvain Tack. The first official broadcast of Mi Amigo Radio was made on New Year's Day, 1974.
Dinsdag, 1 januari.
Dit is het begin van het jaar 1974 en het begin van Mi Amigo Radio. Een nieuw radiostation uitzendend op een golflengte van 259 meter. Hetgeen gelijk is aan een frequentie van 1187 kilohertz. Vanaf vandaag brengt Radio Mi Amigo u 15 uur muziek per dag. Van 's morgens 6 tot 9 uur in de avond kunt u luisteren naar muziek voor u. Luisteraar van Mi Amigo.
Mi Amigo.
Het volgend nummer van Joepie met 118 verschillende vier kleurenstickers.
Joepie, 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 joepie.
Mi Amigo, the vibrations, where the action is. Mi Amigo, that's more music, where the action is.
Zomertijd is Wally's tijd, tijd voor jeans en jackets.
Wally's jeans en jackets.
Zomertijd is Wally's tijd.
De lekkere Suzy wafels, overal verkrijgbaar in de Benelux.
Suzy, Suzy, Suzy wafels.
Radio Mi Amigo.
Mi Amigo Radio on 259 meters, 1187 kilohertz. All was going well. The Caroline organization was making a lot of money out of Radio Mi Amigo's Belgian advertising syndicate. And Radio Seagull was to return to the air a week after Radio Mi Amigo had begun transmissions. But the heavy arm of the Dutch law was threatening. Trouble was just around the corner. For next week, Holland outlaws offshore radio. But for Radio Caroline, this meant home sweet home.
Caroline, Queen of the Pirates.
a series in 13 parts tracing the history of the world's best-known offshore radio station, Radio Caroline. The producer wishes to thank East Anglian Productions of Frinton, Essex, for their valuable assistance in the making of this program. The series is produced and presented by Dave Windsor.